No one ever bothered to study this design of a motor because they got stopped by this wall, this surge that happens. And so they just concluded that, oh, that's that, let's stay away from it. And so they avoided the challenge of finding out, well, maybe there's more to this than meets the eye. And the simulation process helps to get past this barrier of ignorance imposed by ourselves by failure to be curious. And so I've already discovered by monkeying with it for a day yesterday that the surge only lasts for 10 milliseconds, and then it dampens itself out. It self-dampens in less than 10 milliseconds. By the end of 10 milliseconds, it's just about gone. So it's probably, you know, the window of the surge is less than 10 milliseconds. It's more like 4 or 6. In any case, it goes away. But it's so damaging that the simulator can't handle it. It goes up to a value of voltage greater than what the simulator can count. One followed by 100 zeros is a pretty big number. Or 100 nines, let's put it this way. You know, 100 place values of 999999, that's a pretty big scientific notation number. Anywho, the fact of the matter is it goes away, it self-dampens, and if we learn how to prevent the surge from happening for that 10 millisecond duration and get past it, then we've got ourselves a motor that's so efficient that it can run off of a very small amount of voltage and yet still display the large outcome that we have come to depend on for an electric motor running an electric car at not merely golf cart speeds, but the type of acceleration we would expect of a race car, and the type of torque we would expect of a truck being able to haul a lot of mass. So solving the problem is really just solving the problem of the surge. And it's not unlike Tesla, who had to solve the problem of the lineman getting killed when he threw the switch. When the huge voltage built up at the power plant in Niagara Falls, wanted to find the shortest path to take, and it chose to use the lineman's body to ground, rather than traverse the miles of resistance of copper wire in the transmission line leading from Niagara Falls to New York City. That's a lot of resistance. Why bother? Why not just go through the lineman's body and go to ground? And that's what it did. So he had to figure out a way to block the surge of voltage that had built up on purpose, because they had to do it that way before they threw the switch. They had to turn on the generators, develop a surge, get the generators up to full RPM before they could throw the switch. And that meant dealing with a huge surge on one side of a switch and zero voltage on the other side. And throwing the switch generated a huge problem for the lineman who operated the switch. He died. So Tesla had to figure out a solution. I don't know what the solution is. All I know is I have to prevent this surge from happening, because the simulator tells me that it's happening. It tells me in no uncertain terms when I take the analysis, the transient analysis, too far, the probe analysis for any particular, you know, component I want to zoom in on. What it does is it tells me if I go too far with this, a component will be flagged for what it calls multiple faults. And that's its jargon. What it really means is the voltage has built up too much on that component to handle that voltage, because it's beyond 100 decimal positions of our numbering system to be able to count any further. The level of surge that has developed in at currently my limit is 4 milliseconds. Where is it? Micro. I think it's micro. Yeah. 4 microseconds is as far as I've been able to take it, because at 5 microseconds it chokes and dies. That's how much voltage gets built up so quickly in just one component. Right now I've got it focused on starter coil number 1, the one at the bottom of the tier of 3, the vertical tier of 3. I used to have it build up on L1, or no, excuse me, L2. the L2 coil. But now that I've put a switch on the electric short wire at the bottom of the schematic near the ground, the common ground to the right, the lower right, now it builds up not on L2, because the switch is near L2, so it seems to be protecting L2. Now I have it building up on SC1, and so I need to put the switch near SC1. Now, I have the switch on a parallel branch adjacent to L2. I don't have it in series with it. That must be the catch. So maybe I have to move up and put the switch on L1 immediately below the parallel branch of SC1. That's odd. Well, that's where the regulating resistor is and the capacitor. Maybe I should put it where the capacitor is. That would be the logical place to put it, I guess. On either side of the capacitor, possibly. Maybe it's bouncing off that capacitor and ending up somewhere else. Yeah, it's not going to stay at the capacitor. It's ending up on the inductors. The inductors are the ones that are complaining. It could be that capacitor that I put in to boost the efficiency of the overunity is creating a problem. And maybe that's the fulcrum. Maybe the switch has to be there. Maybe I don't need multiple switches. Just, you know, a pair of switches on either side of that capacitor to protect everything else in the circuit. All the other inductors in the circuit, because it's the inductors that are complaining. Yeah, capacitors are not going to complain with a surge. They're going to get rid of it as soon as they get it. But it's going to go through the coils and heat them up and build up voltage because of their resistance. There are various types of resistances, inductive resistance and so forth and so on. The reactants, they're not going to handle it. It's the coils who get heated up. So the capacitor is going to throw the shit back out in the face of the inductors. And the inductors are going to have to get steamy hot. Why'd you give this to us? We don't want this shit. Well, you deal with it. And the capacitor is very good at getting somebody else, such as the inductors, to deal with it. Or resistors, but mainly it's the inductors because they create back and forth. They create their own problem. Capacitors just get rid of the problem. and they don't create any problem for themselves. They're smart. The capacitors, I always liked capacitors. They're the ones who create the overunity. And that could be it in this circuit. It might be that little 10 nanofarad capacitor that's innocent, looks so innocent, but is actually creating all the nightmare for everybody else in the circuit, all the other components. If they were given anthropomorphic personalities and personalized and made to be humanized, then all the inductors are steaming hot that the capacitor is creating shit for them. That's what I bet is going on. You have to get in the mind of the circuit. You have to train yourself to think like a circuit thinks. And that's all I've done. I've taken a different approach of self-teaching myself electrodynamic theory. It's called the method style of acting, in which you get into the mind of the character of your that you're you know, told to portray in some play or movie or whatever, a script. And you get into the mind and personality, and you start to be that character. And that's what I've done. I've learned to be the coils and capacitors in a circuit and be them. You know, not try to intellectually analyze it, just be them. And so that the wave mechanics that results in my other side of my brain, the gestalt side, not the linguistic intellectual side, but the spatial-oriented geometry side that thinks holistically rather than gets bogged down in details. I don't like details. I never did. I hate them. That's why I hate computers, but I know they're the only way to get anything done in this world when it comes to mental work. I know the computers of the future will be totally different. They'll be gestalt-oriented in there. They won't have keyboards and they won't have monitors and it'll be 3D holographic imaging, but it won't even be something you see outside yourself. It'll be something inside your brain that will simply be. You will be what it is you're trying to think about. You will be it. And all of its consequences. Well, you know, these are just personalities. You know, they're very basic functions of consciousness, these little components and how they behave and interact. And so we're really learning about ourselves at a very fundamental level, how the personality of the human being operates. And the human being has the capacity for understanding the functionality of creation at the most fundamental level, at the level of the gap between the absolute and the relative, the most sensitive, subtle, vulnerable area of interaction or beingness, you know, outside the absolute, where the absolute, nothing happens. And the relative, everything happens, and we lose our focus of our anchor to the absolute. But in the gap, we keep awareness of both, the awareness of the absolute and the awareness of the activity of the relative, and are able to discern what the relative is all about. And that's really what electrodynamic theory, it's the study of the activity of creation at the most fundamental level, while you're situated in the gap between the two, between the absolute and the relative, looking at the relative as to how it functions. So what we call quantum physics is really the study of electrodynamic theory at the most fundamental level of its activity. It's just a fancy term that's been relegated to physics, what really belongs in electrodynamic theory. So that the electrodynamic theorists don't study it. They say, oh no, you got to become a quantum physicist. No, it doesn't belong there. Because it's not practical. Quantum physics is not practical. Electrodynamics, that's practical. So it's been a misappropriation of motive, of study, to take it out of people's hands so that they don't study it in a practical way. They study it in a quantum mechanical way, which doesn't sound practical to me. you do the math of the import of what that phrase, what impact that phrase has on the mind of the human saying it or thinking it. It's like, don't go there. Don't go behind the curtain. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. But yin and yang, the Tao, goes there. And the Tao has everything to do with electrodynamic theory, positive and negative, you know? It's what it's all about, positive and all kinds of opposites, all kinds of fundamental opposites, not just positive and negative in general, but all types of positives and negatives. So this is my little diatribe for the political scene of why we don't do any more study in electrodynamic theory. And that's what I'm doing. I'm doing fundamental study of electrodynamic theory. And it's an uncharted country because of this surge that happens that's so ridiculously humongous that'll burn up any motor you try to configure in this manner if we don't prevent it from burning up the motor. And I'm sure there's a solution, because all solutions have simple technical solutions. In utter simplicity, we just have to know what the solution is and implement it before we turn on this gizmo wired this way, this motor transformer wired this way, so as to prevent the motor transformer from burning itself up before it even leaves the 10 millisecond window after zero duration when we turn it on. That 10 millisecond window is the most dangerous window for that poor little motor and anybody who stands near it, for that matter. This is the beauty of simulation. Nobody gets hurt. And we get to figure out these problems, provided, of course, we use a realistic simulator, so that we can approach the problem in a realistic manner and not get off target, not get off target of realism. So now that I'm realistically simulating it, I see the surge. And there it is. Byron Brubaker warned me. And I haven't been able to see the surge. I just kind of hoped for it and believed it was out there somewhere in reality. Well, now I get to see it full force in my face. And it's quite a challenge, since I have no idea what I'm doing. I just Edison approach, try this, try that, until I exhaust all possibilities. And I know there are possibilities I haven't tried. The circuit doesn't have too many factors to it for me to realize I haven't tried everything. And I believe a switch or a pair of switch or a quadruple pair, a pair of pairs of switches, four switches might do the job, two on either side, and each in parallel with each other in each pair. I was doing one pair of a series pair of switches, and that wasn't working. But now I can see I may have missed the boat, that I have to be more thorough and use a pair of parallel switches on either side of the problem. That would be my first attempt that I should try to do. To turn off the source, the voltage source, the two aerials, for 1 millisecond duration, and see if I get a flat line of 0 volts for a millisecond. Then the simulator shouldn't have a problem simulating 1 millisecond. It should go zip right through and not have any problems, because right now it takes a long time, because it's computing a surge developing on some component or another, and that takes a lot of time of computation. So if it's not instantaneous to do 10 milliseconds, then there's something wrong. Then I need to reconfigure. I shouldn't sit and wait to get the multiple false error message. I've been wasting my time. But I have to stand back, you know, go to sleep, wake up in the morning, and look at this in a fresh new way, so that I can see the problem for what it is. It's a surge I need to suppress. I need to be like a normal electrical engineer whose one of their main jobs is to suppress surges, because they won't get paid. You know, if they're the main two jobs of an electrical engineer that pay, or there are only two of them. One is to work on transmission lines, and the other is to work on computer chips and computer motherboards. And if you can't suppress a surge in both of those situations, you won't get paid at the end of the day or at the end of the week. You know, the end of your pay cycle, you won't get paid. And those are the only two jobs that pay. Everything else, you'll be lucky if you get any money, like for a grant to do research. I have to do this for free on my own. And I usually worry about at the end of the month, will my Social Security check pay for my food? So I'm being strangled already for other reasons I won't get into, personal reasons, to prevent me from having any money to play with. So I got to do this for free. But it's a problem in conceptual logistics, conceptualization of a surge. And now I can see I have to suppress a surge. I first created it. I successfully created it by being more realistic. And now I have to suppress it for 10 milliseconds. And hope that it goes away for the most part, because I've seen before in these simulations that all I do with the suppression of a surge is put it off for later. But in the course of putting it off for later, it does get dampened to some relativistic degree, and it usually is to a very large degree. I don't know if I say 80%, am I pushing it? You know, 90%, 95%, and that's pretty good. That's very good considering the size of the surge. It might even be more than 80 or 95%. And of course, it has to do with how long it's suppressed for. The longer it's suppressed, the longer it's put off, and the more longer it's put off, the greater degree is its suppression. So it's really a question of how long I choose to suppress it. And again, that's a technical difficulty. 10 milliseconds is not very long to wait around for your motor to turn on in your electric car. Good grief, you wouldn't even notice it. Yeah, a tenth of a second, you wouldn't notice that. So even a second. My car lets me wait 5 seconds before the ready light comes on and it beeps, telling me it's ready to drive and pull out of the parking stall. 5 whole seconds. So I've still got a lot of wiggle room ahead of me to expand a window of suppression beyond a mere 10 milliseconds if I have to get rid of the consequence of that dampened surge that may still be lingering as too much to deal with, for the motor to deal with, for the motor transformer to deal with. This is really not a motor anymore. This is a motor transformer. And even though I'm being prevented from calling it that in a gallery page on Wikimedia, that's what it is. It is a motor transformer by definition. It's just transforming for its own benefit so much voltage that it kills the simulator in 5 microseconds. So if I run it for 4, I can see it rise to a value of voltage on L1, resulting in 94 place values of scientific notation. Something like 1.6 to e to the 94. And that's how much voltage it builds up on L1. Because that's what I always scope. I scope L1 just out of habit. I don't bother to look at anything else. Although I get the error messages and everything else, so maybe I should be. Yeah, eventually, I'll probably have to look at the other components. But be that as it may, yeah, I'll have to look at all the coils. That's right, every single coil. And there's only 5 in this simplified version. Instead of 10 coils, there's only 5 coils here. So I just have to look at all of them eventually. But right now, I just look at one. It doesn't matter which one I pick. Either one will have fried by then. So that's my thoughts on this subject before I go off and work on it. It's just a simple problem, a technical problem. But it's getting past this problem that gets past the lack of curiosity that we have had for figuring it out. Figuring out and getting the benefit of having a motor transformer for a motor to put in your EV or to put in your home to run a generator to power your home. Well, actually, not the power generator, because it becomes a generator. You know, that's the whole point here, is that it becomes a generator. It becomes its own prime mover, oddly enough, an electrical prime mover. So it doesn't have to be a motor that moves. It can be a transformer that sits still with no moving parts. You know, it can be either way. It doesn't matter which way you throw the thing. I'm looking at it from the point of view of a simulator. I've always felt that a simple, cheap simulator is the only way anybody needs to look at anything to figure out how to create over Unity. I've always felt that the secret lies in our use of cheap simulators that don't cost us anything, so that we don't have to get into material science, you know, Tesla's trimetal generator, copper, aluminum, and iron, how they interact. We don't have to do that. Don't have to go there. Just go into the very simple mechanics of how does a coil and a capacitor operate with regard to each other. Eric Dollard has taken that position, and I have to agree. The caps and coils are all we have to focus on for the solution to overunity in its simplest format. And what it looks to be in its description is a motor transformer acting as its own prime mover, its own generator, to become a generator. With or without moving parts, our choice, minor detail. I guess that's all I should say at this point. Now, I question the veracity of me pursuing this, because I throw away something very precious in the course of pursuing this. I do. So I should probably take a day off just to chill out, because one of the problems with science and scientists is they get so enthusiastic about what they're studying, they lose their large view of the situation, like the humanistic repercussions of an invention, the sociological repercussions. You know, that if anybody found out about this thing. So we have this mental block for a multiple of reasons, because we want to keep things the way they are. We don't want things to radically change, and it would radically change society, and that is very disruptive. Do I want that consequence? Karma. That's karma. That's a karmic consequence. You know, I never thought about these things when I was a child, and I've been going about this with a very childlike, an adolescent, you know, point of view, in which you're motivated by your adrenaline, or whatever hormone you choose to call it, blame it on, but no sense of decorum that comes with being a little older. Which I am getting a little older. Do I want the karma for putting this out there? I don't know. Maybe I should keep it to myself and leave it at that, and let somebody else, 30 to 100 to 1,000 years from now, take your pick, come up with it again all over. And maybe then we'll be ready for it. Maybe it's time to keep it to myself and not share. Because I understand the nature of the problem. It's, first of all, is discovering the existence of the surge, which MicroCap actually allows me to produce. I never thought in my wildest dreams MicroCap would allow me to produce a surge, because it's so busy suppressing them when they happen, you know. But here I am creating a circuit that manages to function for a whole 4 microseconds, creating this surge that the simulator chokes on. I managed to do what I thought was impossible, that MicroCap would never allow me to do, and it allows me to do it in version 11. I haven't tried it in version 12, the latest version of MicroCap, so I don't know, but in version 11 it lets me do it. It allows me to do this unthinkable task of studying a search to my heart's content, create it, and now I get to figure out how to suppress it. Yesterday I wasted my time thinking how to manage it, and I realized it was a mistake, and then I realized I don't need to. I need to suppress it, I need to dampen it, and I need to kill it. Well, no, not kill it. I need to put it off. I need to simply put it off by dampening it, but not kill it, because I know how to kill it. I know, it's the third starter coil, and it's the second main coil, the bifilar coil. It's those two extra coils that create the surge in their relationship with the rotor, the squirrel cage rotor. And it was my failure to properly simulate those two relationships with the rotor that failed to produce the surge in the simulation. I didn't even know it was there. Now I know it's there. And so what Byron Brubaker warned me is true. It does indeed occur. If you short out a motor, it fries itself. It does indeed happen. But how do you deal with it and not kill it? Not prevent it from happening, just prevent it from doing any damage. How do you prevent the damage without killing the surge? That is my curious question. But the second question is, do I share it with anyone? Do I keep it to myself and share it with no one? And tease you and tell you that it's there. And maybe not tell you, but, you know, that wouldn't be fair. No, it would be fair to tell, because how many people are going to bother to study this, you know? But there are sociological consequences, and that's something I have to include in this video, in this audio recording. There are sociological consequences. Do you want them? It's karma. This is a world of karma, a world of reincarnation. If we fail to become enlightened in any particular lifetime, we get to come back and face our karma all over again and pick up where we left off with a different perspective, the other side of the picture. That's all I have to do, is look at the other side of the fence and the consequences. Look at all the people I upset when I share this. They have a mental block. They can't even stand the word over unity. They want to put their hands on their ears and say, oh, you're hurting my ears. They've said this on a mailing list. You're hurting my ears. I'll get bumped out of a mailing list that I like to maintain a relationship with, because the administrator of the mailing list has warned me, you bring this up one more time, and I'm going to have to exclude you from the mailing list. So I know, and I've been excluded from forums. I've been excluded from the Tesla Motors forum. I've been excluded from posting at the Do-It-Yourself Electric Car Forum, I believe it's called, because I actually scared somebody. Because my argument is so well-founded, my understanding is so broad on this topic of a surge, that nobody can persuade me that I'm wrong, because I can keep coming up with a different argument while they keep repeating like robots the only thing they know, one sentence, and they keep repeating it like a broken record, like a robot. Yet I can keep coming up with different answers to counter their singular answer they keep repeating. So it shows I know my topic better than they do. And that actually scared somebody on the Do-It-Yourself Electric Car Forum so bad the administration had to exclude me from ever posting again. I can log in, you know, but I can't post. It doesn't get posted. It just gets dumped automatically. And I've been warned on other forums, all about circuits.com. I've been warned on multiple forums, you know, that I'm not well received anymore, you know. Some other places, they tolerate me because they haven't choked yet. EDA board, I think, is one forum. They haven't choked yet. And some places, I get tolerated so well, they even asked me to write an article, and I did. But, like robots, that's all, you know, all it takes is one guy, you know, to do the work of everybody else who sits back and watches, as the one guy performs his robotic task of repeating that one phrase over and over again. And he never comes up with any other concept, let alone, he doesn't even come up with other wording, let alone any other concept to throw at me. He just repeats the same wording of the same concept over and over again like a robot, because and everybody else stands by and watches. And those are not the good Samaritans, because they're not helping out. So they're not helping by standing by and doing nothing and just watching from a distance, a safe distance. But it shows we're not ready for it. I can criticize these people all I want to, but it shows that we're not emotionally equipped to handle a society in which energy costs less than the postage stamp it costs to mail us the bill. I take an example from hyperinflation, the Weimar Republic of Germany, between the years of World War I and World War II, and it cost more on the postage stamp to mail a little old lady the life insurance policy of her dead husband than it did to cash in that check, that life insurance policy check, and get the benefit. The benefit of the life insurance was less than the cost of the postage stamp to mail it. That's the ideology of what I use, the metaphor, metaphorically, to show what is the real cost of electrical energy, given the fact that we have suppressed technologies that we're not using that date back 100 years ago, that we've been suppressing for a whole century. Tesla knew about this stuff. There's no such thing as an electric car hoax of Nikola Tesla. It does not exist as a hoax. It's in our minds that we have to have it be a hoax to protect ourselves from the consequences of it not being a hoax, and that is a transformation of society from the ground up and from side to side so complete that it'll blow away nearly 100% of the population of this planet who cannot handle that kind of transformation. They couldn't handle it. They couldn't live in such a world in which nobody has to struggle anymore to stay alive. Everybody who lives here will deserve to be alive for free. For free. And then whatever they do with their life is their business at their cost. That makes sense. But if it's within the domain of basic necessities, it's for free. Education, for free. You can spend all the time in the world doing what I do for free and not have to worry about grant money supporting you. I have karma supporting me, a bare minimum keeping me alive. And that's all I have, but I was born with it from a past lifetime. So I don't have to struggle to stay alive. But that's it. I'll never be wealthy, but at least I don't have to worry about where my next meal is coming from and a place of habitation, provided I don't do anything to stick out like a sore thumb, which I've done plenty of. So I'm not doing so well, but I am getting by. So if I was to share this information, I'd get by even less. I'd probably die. I have so much stress from the hatred being sent to me, affecting my subconscious, which is my body, because that's where the subconscious is located, in the body, not in the brain. The conscious mind isn't located in the brain, but the subconscious mind is located in the rest of the body. And my body is so taxed that I have to do all these protocols just to stay from killing myself with heart failure, or a stroke, or a cerebral hemorrhage, because I literally am bombarded by so much hatred. I chose to share my Sanskrit name with the world by making it legal in order to have this feedback prominent in my conscious mind, in my awareness, so that I know how well am I doing. As David Crockett would say, or King Arthur would say to the common person, how am I doing as your leader, as your, David Crockett was a senator or a congressman? He was a congressman. David Crockett was a congressman 200 years ago, or 150 years ago, however the years are, I can't do the math in my head, nearly 200 years ago. And he went out into the public and actually slept with a guy and stayed in his home, so that he could ask, firsthand, how am I doing as your congressman? Tell me how I'm doing. Because he cared. And he ended up quitting the Congress business because the rest of the Congress people, congressmen and couldn't care less what other people thought of how they're doing. They just, all they cared about was their own well-being. That's all they cared about. So he couldn't stand working with them. It was a waste of time. But he cared. And so did King Arthur, because King Arthur did the same thing, and so, I think, did Ptah, the first pharaoh of Egypt, when the Atlanteans fled Atlantis 75,000 years ago and built the Cheops Pyramid in Giza. That's when the Cheops it was radiocarbon dated at 71,000 years, and nobody believes their own measurement. They threw it away thinking, oh, there must be a flaw there. But the flaw of radiocarbon dating is a mere 11,000 years or 1,100 years, and not enough to span 75,000. So what the hell are they throwing it away for? The error, the margin error, isn't even big enough to cause them to think that they should throw it away. But they did. So I think the first pharaoh of Egypt is the same person, the same soul as David Crockett and King Arthur and Ptah of Egypt. He had a bird's head, because a lot of the people leaving Egypt, leaving Atlantis, had animal parts in their bodies, because Atlantis was into monkeying with the genes. They knew how to do it, and I won't get into that. But they had a technique for doing that, and 90% of the population abused the other 10%, and it was the 10% who left, and it was the 90% who went down between 4 o'clock in the afternoon and noon the next day, as Charlie Lutz puts it. So, I think it's that same concern that I should have as an investigator into this matter. What are the consequences of figuring it out? Do I really want to share it with anybody? Because it'll upset a few people, and it'll upset them so much, it might just destroy my life. I mean, I've already destroyed my life by being an activist. So do I want to destroy it any further? You know, I would like to think, oh, but it's good information. Yeah, from my point of view, it is. From the kind of people who deserve to stay here for the next 2,400 years. Yeah, because sharing is our way of looking at things. Not, oh, what's in it for me? Well, am I looking at this, what's in it for me, though? Because sharing it with the other, with the majority of the population who can't handle it, they won't be able to handle it. And they won't be able to get through and resolve the challenge of how to handle it. They're in no position to. They won't be able to even fix their problem of their failure to handle it. So why am I throwing it in their face? Why am I giving them a nightmare? For them to show, for them to seek out the shortest shortcut in which to remove the information from public view. I don't think my posting on Wikimedia is going to last very long. It's going to disappear very quickly, and I know why. And I don't need to get into that either. But at least I've shared a little for a little while. And it helped me get this far. So, because only by sharing was I able to advance in learning. It's called karma. There's another aspect to karma, is when you share, the teacher gets all the benefit. And that's what I've done. I've learned how to resolve these challenges of trying to figure this thing out. Because trying to be realistic on the study of electrical surges has been very difficult. But I've gotten to the point now of over a year and a half of this study on the simulator, you know, past the point of just speculating, but actually getting on a simulator and simulating. Over a year and a half, I've gotten to the point that it's actually becoming a realistic possibility to create a surge. And, no, let me rephrase that. Craft a circuit that is capable of creating a surge just so that I can dampen out the surge. Because it's that style of circuitry that can create a surge that can also do something else and create an over-unity situation such that if we learn to manage the surge, then we get the benefit of the circuit that gives us over-unity to a great degree. A COP, a coefficient of performance to a very large degree. Large enough to save a lot of money when it comes time to pay the bill. Holistically, from everybody's standpoint, from the point of view of the source providing the electricity, as well as everyone in between distributing it, and it turns out that you don't need a massive distribution system. You don't need a power company. You don't need a grid. Because every appliance can have their own power source. This is what they had in Atlantis. Every appliance can have its own power source and not require transmission of power at all. Now, in those days, they did distribute two things, but it was not electricity. They distributed light and heat, and that's all they had to distribute. In the early days of electrical AC power transmission, that's all it was used for, was lighting and heating. And that's it. No, mostly lighting, not even heating. But in those simple days of inductive heaters, that they could figure that much out. So lighting and heating, that's all we really needed. And those waves are specific wavelengths. It doesn't have to be electricity. It could be infrared, optically transferred through cable optics, infrared, and visible light. And those two wavelengths, we don't need electricity passed through wires. You know, light through fiber optics doesn't have any resistance to speak of. And so that's very high-end thinking, very efficient thinking, just to distribute light and heat and let electricity be generated in-house, so to speak, in the appliance itself. That's an efficient usage of energy. So lighting and heating can be distributed through fiber optics, the infrared wavelength and the visible wavelength to the all of us to use. And then electricity can be generated in-house in each appliance as it's needed. That's the way Tesla did it in the Pierce Arrow demonstration in 1931. He generated all the energy he needed in his little box and in his motor, actually. In the motor mostly, but also in the box, in the project box. Because that's where it should be generated, in-house, at the location where it's going to be used. So that you have the least amount of resistance you have to deal with between where it's generated and where it's used. And since most of it was being generated in the motor transformer, that's pretty good. That's the least amount of resistance to oppose its generation. So it's intelligent to do it that way, but you got to have a psychology with the least amount of resistance to deal with that. A life of sharing. That was the life of Tesla. All he wanted to do was share. He didn't want to... Well, yeah, I guess he wanted to be famous and show off, you know. And that's been my Achilles heel. It's dangerous to have an ego, to want to show off. And, ooh, look what I get to do. I'm so smart. See what I've done? Oh, but you get to do it too. Here's the information. No, people don't want to hear that. They don't want to go there. And they can't stand a little snot like me who thinks they want to show off and show how smart he is. How come they didn't come up with this simple concept of a motor transformer? How come they didn't do that? You know? It could really upset a lot of people. So it's best, maybe I keep it to myself. And if it gets removed from Wikimedia, so be it. All because I made one mistake, so be it. Be that as it may, I'll let it lie at that.